Hey everyone, and welcome to this Soapbox edition of the Risky Business Podcast. My name's Patrick Gray. Soapbox is the wholly sponsored podcast series we do here at Risky.biz where vendors pay to participate. They sometimes want to talk about their products, other times they want to talk about general ecosystem stuff, other times they want to talk about research that they've done, and that's what's happening today. Alabade Anishi is a data scientist at Duo Security. He and his colleague Jordan Wright put together a talk for Black Hat this year all about Twitter bots. It was called Don't At Me, Hunting Twitter Bots at Scale. As you'll hear, finding bots on Twitter at scale isn't that hard. Surprise, surprise. But doing so with 100% confidence isn't as easy as you'd think. Alabade joined me to talk all about his Black Hat talk on Twitter bots, and here's what he had to say.
Really, Jordan really had an idea of, like, you know, we're both like avid Twitter users. We love Twitter as a platform. But we all are kind of aware of like the presence of bots on Twitter's platform. We know that some of them aren't like malicious in nature. We know some of them are like the Big Ben account that just tweets like ding dong at every hour. But we were interested in seeing like, could we like find like Twitter bots and potentially a botnet at scale and like hopefully doing it in like kind of reproducible fashion. So that other people could like replicate our approach and like build upon it. So that was kind of like the first thing that we like, or the origin or genesis of the project. We just wanted to see like how many Twitter bots could we could find, how fast could we find them, and you know, doing it with just like simple basic things that other people could use.
Well, it's, you know, social media is fun like that, right? Because it's a lot of it's about picking away at graphs and relationships and whatnot. So I can imagine that once you got going, there would have been that first moment where you built essentially, I'm guessing, some sort of crawler to go through and just start, you know, examining attributes and looking at, you know, connections between accounts. Is that sort of how it worked?
So first, like I would say the first part was like data collection. So like just utilizing like Twitter's APIs, like their public accessible APIs, just with one API key, it was just like, could we amass like a huge data set? So that was the first thing we did. So Jordan was really handled that part. Like he was the in charge, like the data collection. And so he built like a system that we actually open sourced on GitHub that like basically just through like collects accounts, really using like their streaming API to get some of the, I guess, like post 2016 accounts that were created. And from there, we were also be able to grab their tweets. So we really were just trying to amass a large data set at first. And like we were able to get like over 80 million accounts and over 500 million tweets. So from there, what we wanted to do was actually try to see like, you know, there's some really like easily identifiable characteristics of bot accounts. Like, okay, if an account replies to a tweet in under 5 seconds, that's like pretty suspicious. Like we're going to have a hard time as like a human to actually like read a tweet, think of a response, type set response in, and press send in like under 5 seconds. So like what we really were trying to do like with that large data set was like, can we try with some of these attributes, like develop some heuristics and trying to identify bots? I mean, so we were really successful in trying to find like accounts that way. But of course, like when you're doing that, there's some false positives. Like there were some accounts that were replying really quickly to tweets, but they were like customer service type of elements to Twitter accounts. So like from like airlines and things like that. So there were a lot of false positives, but that was like really the first place that we started before we did anything in terms of like fancy machine, like, or I guess what we maybe consider fancy in machine learning or doing any type of crawling. So that was where we started.
Yeah, right. So I'm guessing at this point, you know, you're not really interested in what type of botnet. You're just really looking brass tacks, like, you know, how do we identify a bot, whether it's a political, you know, bot, whether it's some sort of, you know, weird Russian thing or whether or not they're just trying to sell you sneakers.
Yeah, exactly. Like we really at that point, really in the, I guess the whole research, we never really focused on like the intent of the maybe the bot or botnet maintainer or owner. We were just trying to see like, is this account automated in some sense? And so, yeah, so like, you know, some of the accounts were just like spamming, maybe just blog links. Some of them, you know, did like point to like malicious websites. But yeah, we weren't really trying to find intent at the beginning. Again, like we were just trying to see how many bots we can identify with just like some simple heuristics, like, okay, if, you know, an account responds really quickly, or like, you know, they're only retweeting maybe like one particular account. Maybe that account is potentially a bot. Obviously, like sometimes it takes some like manual verification of accounts, but like with some, you know, high certainty, we can say like if you're only retweeting one account and you're retweeting those accounts very quickly, like your account is most likely automated in some fashion.
It's funny you mentioned blog links, right? Because I'm not going to rat them out like and mention who it was, but we did one of these podcasts, one of these Soapbox podcasts, one of my customers, right? One of the Risky Business sponsors, their marketing team are using a spam botnet to, you know, on Twitter to actually, we're using that botnet to promote it. So I could see it in the keyword searches I got set up for Risky Biz. That was pretty funny when you got a security company actually out there spamming links to its marketing material.
Yeah. But,
okay. So I know that, you know, the emphasis for you guys eventually became, you know, really looking at approaches for doing this at scale. You already mentioned that you were getting false positives just looking at some basic heuristics. So I guess what I'm getting at is like, okay, you've amassed all of this data. You've started crunching it with some basic heuristics. What were the ones that were effective and what were the ones that you expected to be effective that actually weren't and threw you a lot of false positives? Because when you're dealing with a platform as big as Twitter, you know, from their perspective, if they're trying to do this, false positives are a killer of any approach, because then, you know, say you boot a million accounts and only 1% of them, 1% of them are false positives, then you got 10,000 angry customers basically. So what were the approaches that worked? What were the approaches that didn't work? And what were the approaches you expected to work that didn't?
Yeah. So, like I've mentioned already, like one of the things that when we started out in the onset, we were like, it's really hard to spoof time. Like you may be able to like change your location, and things of that sort, but like time is one of the things that you can't, that's really hard to spoof. So things like reply and retweet times, those were something that were like super effective in finding what would be considered maybe bot accounts or cyborg accounts. When I say cyborg accounts, those are accounts that at some points are operated by humans and sometimes there's some automation. So, and also another thing was like, we saw that certain accounts were tweeting essentially the distribution of their tweets over time, you know, just terms of hours of the day was constant. So there was the same amount of tweets every single hour. That's really hard. So again, like that's a temporal or time component. Things like that we thought would be pretty effective, but had a lot of false positives were like percentage of like tweets that contain URLs. So, you know, like we were saying, like there are certain accounts that are, you know, spam generating or content generating bot accounts that are just trying to get their links or their content out there. And, you know, we hypothesized that, you know, those accounts would come up. And they did within our data set when we were filtering on accounts that had maybe 100% of their tweets contained URLs. But we also found legitimate news organizations like CNN and all these other cases because they're, you know, legitimately linking to their articles that they have or their
videos. Occasional weirdos too who just only tweet links, right? Or people who are using them kind of as a bookmark service. I've seen people do that as well.
Yeah, so like, and that's one of those things like when you're trying to develop some type of algorithm or approach to detecting bots, you really have to understand how the different people utilize Twitter's platform. And that was something that, you know, you kind of learn and you're like, okay, like, yeah, this person is like, all their links are URLs. But like you said, it's a kind of a bookmarking service or, you know, they're just a legitimate blogger trying to get more people to their content. So those are just some examples of like in some cases where it was effective, but that false positive rate. And like you said, like we are operating at Twitter scale, like, you know, a 0.01% threshold or false positive could be way too many accounts that you like and too much. I guess you probably put a burden on your support team.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. So from there, you're going to need to move beyond, you know, looking at simple attributes, right? And you're going to need to build some sort of classifier. So where did you begin with that process?
Yeah. So like the great thing is like by utilizing some of these potential like characteristics of automation, like it's pretty easy once you've identified these characteristics to move to like a simple like supervised machine learning or supervised classifier. That's kind of what we did, like utilizing some of these attributes of like average time to response, percentage of URLs with tweets, all of these different things. We were able to use, and we kind of tested many different algorithms or models to do this. But the important thing is when you're doing like supervised machine learning, you need data to train on. And so during our literature review, we read like tons of papers on how people went about doing, you know, classifying different accounts as whether they are bots or not. We actually came across this data set by some researchers out at USC who had hand labeled accounts as bots or not. So we were able to utilize some of that data to train our classifier on, like, all we had, I think, over 20 different features that we ended up using in the end.
I'd imagine one thing that would clear up, you know, those customer service bots and things like that. Okay, so that is a bot that's automated, but you might want to, you know, you might be able to exclude them because you might notice that a whole bunch of non-bot legitimate accounts seem to be interacting with that account. Is it things like that that help you reduce the false positives?
So yeah, that's definitely something that you could potentially do. We didn't do that in our case. Like, in most of the cases where, like, the customer service, like, bots would probably get filtered out on a verified account. They'd have a verified check mark.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things that we included. But yeah, interactions with people, that's one of the features that was used in one of the papers that we read about, of like, you know, but it is kind of a dicey thing, is you have to implicitly trust one account to then say, like, okay, if they're interacting with this account, maybe it's not a bot. So yeah, there's definitely some assumptions you have to make when doing some of this classification. But yeah, so like once we have that training data set, we were able to then, you know, train like different models and see which ones like worked the best and which ones didn't. And, you know, we got some really good results on the training set, obviously, in terms of, you know, our precision being like a 99%, with like our best model, which was a random forest. So it worked out really well. But the thing that we kind of ran into when doing this classification was, you know, your model is only as good as the data that you have, but if your data doesn't like accurately represent what is actually going on Twitter's platform, then like some of your results could be deemed useless or just like nonsensical in a way. So like, for example, we don't know the true percentage of bot accounts that are on Twitter's platform. Some papers in literature has tried to like estimate that. So like some people say between somewhere maybe north of 10%, maybe between 10 and 15%. So like when you're trying to like split up your training set, like you would want your data set to like kind of mimic that. So like when we changed like the percentage of bot accounts that we had, our precision in recall, of course, dipped to like around the 95 percentile.
Yeah. But I'm Twitter support listening to this, I'm like, no, you know, that's not acceptable. That's useless.
Yeah. That's definitely true. Like, and we kind of like we kind of talked about this and like some of like our like the actual published paper about like not understanding the kind of cost of a false positive. Like, it's because
Could you just sort of tweak your model so that you were getting like really low false positives and maybe some false negatives as well, to just like try to clean up the most obvious stuff?
Oh yeah, like, I mean, that's one of the things, like in a lot of cases when people do classification, usually like your model will output a probability that your account is a bot or not. So sometimes people use a natural threshold of like 0.5. And so you could always ratchet that up to like, you know, the 90th percentile or above to try to reduce your false positives. And so your results would vary across that. And of course, like one of the things is you're probably going to miss accounts that are like bordering on that threshold. Like if you have it all the way to maybe 95%, it clearly be bots, but of course you don't want that false positive because you don't want to incur the cost of potentially misclassifying that account. So yeah, that's something that we kind of looked at, kind of examined different thresholds, and like our accuracy obviously increased when we tried to when we changed that threshold to a higher percentile. But like in terms of the accounts that, you know, in our large data set that we classified, it also decreased drastically as well.
So, okay, you've run your classifier, you've got a bunch of different models, you've pulled out a whole bunch of data about these different bots that are operating on Twitter. So I guess, you know, what did you find? What did you learn about botnets in the wild on Twitter?
So one of the things that in terms of like what our model was really classifying, like, I mean, one of the things that we saw was like one of the distinct characteristics was like hours tweeted throughout the day, like the average number of hours. So like we kind of understood that, like, yes, a lot of the bots that we at least classify were exhibiting this kind of restlessness in terms of like never sleeping versus the users that actually were classified as genuine accounts. We also saw that those accounts also were like, most people would understand that bot accounts are usually, you know, they may not have a profile picture. It'll be the egg accounts. They might not have a profile picture. And a lot of the accounts that we are model classified as bot accounts, and that was sometimes the ones that we verified, also exhibited some of those things as well. But again, like one thing that our model tended to do, which like we didn't really expect, was that it started to classify accounts that were just generally more active as genuine accounts, which, you know, there's, you know, going to be accounts that fall in different ranges of that. But that's just, of course, like, again, like our model was built from this training set where like the bot accounts, you know, were less active relative to their account age. So those are some of the things that we noticed, but that's just like looking at individual bots.
I'm sort of curious about like, you know, higher order stuff, right? Like, did you notice that, you know, there was a surprising proportion of bots on Twitter were doing X, Y, Z, you know, like, did you find a lot of political stuff? Did you find a lot of spam stuff? Did you find a lot of malware stuff? Or was it really just like all over the place?
So like in terms of like the botnet, so we actually, the one in like the focus, are like, I guess like the conclusion or like case study of our research was like, we ended up finding a cryptocurrency botnet that most people are probably familiar with. There was like a lot of cryptocurrency spam going on. I mean, so that really, that botnet, it really exhibited like one particular characteristic, which was like, it was trying to spread this scam through like, you know, these links. So it'd be, I would say, classified as like a spam generating or content generating bot account.
Yeah, almost like a phishing Twitter botnet, right? Like I'm guessing these are the ones that reply saying, send, you know, 0.1 Bitcoin to this address and I'm going to give you heaps.
Exactly.
Bitcoin.
It was like, you know, in the foolproof way of like, you send me $5, I'll send you back 10. And so what we found was like in this bot, like the actual particular accounts had different purposes. So like in some accounts or some botnets that were found, like there was like a STARS botnet that was found a couple years ago by a set of researchers that was, the only purpose of the botnet was to tweet, I believe, quotes from Star Wars books. And so in that case, like botnet was very large, but it only had one purpose. Like every account did the same thing. In this case, the botnet actually had really, there was like different purposes. So there were accounts that were just, there were accounts that were, you know, tweeting out the spam or saying like, you know, tweeting out that link to the Ethereum address or Bitcoin address. Then there were other accounts, the purpose was to follow those accounts. So to boost their popularity, to, you know, enhance the credibility when they're tweeting out these links.
Did they have, do you know, were they replying saying, I got my money from you, thank you so much, that sort of thing? So
there were accounts that were doing that as well. But then like there was even like another set of accounts that were actually, you know, responsible for retweeting and actually liking those tweets. So like in the case of these, all of the accounts that I've kind of just described, the accounts that were, you know, tweeting out the link, we would consider spam bots. The accounts that were following those spam generated accounts trying to boost their popularity, we would consider those most of the time fake followers, because their only intent is to boost or artificially inflate their like credibility or follower account. And then we had amplification bots, with those accounts were the ones that were liking and retweeting their particular spam. So, I mean, again, this particular campaign or cryptocurrency scam seemed legitimate because you had all of these different accounts playing different roles to, you know, enhance the credibility of it. So that was one thing where we kind of saw a botnet have what we probably would consider a sophisticated structure versus every bot doing the exact same thing.
Well, I guess, I mean, the purpose of that, I guess, is, I mean, that's evasion, right? They're trying to stop being, they're trying to prevent people detecting or twigging to the fact that they're a botnet. And, you know, everything that you just described is sort of designed to fool people. But were elements of that also, in your view, designed to evade classifiers like the one you built as well?
Yeah, I think the botnet, like in the one of the interesting things was that it kind of like the participants or like the accounts involved, like the accounts involved evolved over time. So like there was, in some cases, like the botnet at one point was just like faking Elon, like trying to spoof like Elon Musk accounts. But like obviously like some automated techniques would say like, okay, anybody who's not Elon Musk but has this particular display name and doesn't have a verified check mark, you could automatically kind of detect those things. But of course they started going about changing the name. So these are the spam generating bots, just to clarify. They started like changing the profile picture to add some noise to the picture so it's not easily detectable. They started including like Unicode characters in the text.
And they were starting, really, I remember they were warping the profile picture, right? Because that was one thing Twitter was detecting on. So yeah, they changed the colors, then Twitter got wise to that and they started warping his face, and some of them were horrible, man. They were like projections from hell.
Yeah, they really tried to do anything they could to kind of detect like some of these automations. And so this is one of the things about, I guess you would say, it wouldn't be quite be adversarial machine learning, but it's just like trying to understand what the algorithms that are using to detect whatever you're doing, and seeing how you can change like basically the data that it's like trying to classify on to kind of evade detection. So it's definitely one of those things where like it was a cat and mouse game. Not only, I mean, for us and some of the detection that we were doing, but also for Twitter as well, for seeing this accounts that, you know, just, you know, they maybe lived a little bit longer than the other accounts because, you know, they were using non-ASCII characters, or they had, you know, added white space to like the actual like string of text that they were tweeting about the campaign. So, you know, it was the botnet or the bot maintainers were, you know, trying different things, just trying to avoid a detection and kind of get their get their cryptocurrency scam to produce as much money. And like in some cases, like we actually just, you know, out of curiosity, looked at some of the addresses relative to their age, and there was like one account, one Ethereum address that there was 20,000 at the time. Obviously, the cryptocurrency market is a little bit different now, but at the time, $20,000 USD had got transferred to that account from different addresses in 2 days. So the scam was very effective, at least, you know, appearing. And we don't know where, you know, if all of that money was actually from people who were a victim of the scam, but.
Or if they just wanted to create the impression of money flowing to that address, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, there's probably a combination of the two, but I mean, it's just one of those things where you maybe could hypothesize about the effectiveness of the campaign and people actually participating. But one of the things that was actually particularly interesting was, I guess, the last phase of the botnet in terms of like our initial investigation into it was that they started getting access to what was verified accounts.
I remember when this happened, they were obviously doing some sort of phishing campaign, targeting verified accounts, taking them over and then changing the display name. So, and this was probably bypassing a lot of Twitter's controls because they'd take over some verified, you know, regional journalist's account, change their name to Elon Musk, and then it looked like a verified Elon Musk account.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Like, of course, we can't, like, we don't know how they got access to the verified accounts. Like, there are, you know, many different ways that someone could. But like you said, that most of the accounts, when they were, you know, returned to the rightful owner, they said they got hacked. So like that may be one of the prevailing reasons why that happened. But you're right. Like if I have a blue check mark, and you know, if you're scrolling Twitter casually, not paying attention, you know, you see an account or you see a reply to an Elon Musk tweet from what seems to be like Elon Musk in terms
blue
of
blue check
their,
mark, no problem.
Yep. Display name. It's like, okay, like is Elon Musk really trying to give me money? And maybe that's something a thought of a user. Because that blue verified check mark, this, you know, that is the ultimate stamp of credibility or approval by Twitter and their platform. And so, of course, when a botnet or with the purpose of spreading like a scam has an account or accounts with that, those blue check marks, it's really tough for them and also just the users of the platform.
Now, did you say earlier that you were just focusing on post-2016 tweets?
Well, so one of the things that we like during our research, we were trying to, of course, when we were trying to amass accounts, like we knew that, you know, there's, how can I say this? So one of the methods that we used was the streaming API to try to get accounts. And the reason we did that was because Twitter, in terms of how they went about generating IDs that are have to be sent up to their API to actually get a user object, which has like all the account details, they changed their format. So after 2016, which it uses Snowflake IDs, was different than what they used before then. And so that was one of the reasons that we actually had basically two different approaches to actually getting accounts. So before 2016, you could just enumerate starting with like 0 or 1 and like get all of the user IDs in a certain range. But after 2016, they moved to a different format, which then you have to basically use some method in order to generate valid user IDs, which was a lot harder. So that's why we used the actual streaming API to like
to just see what was actually happening now. So the reason I ask is because I'm wondering how much of the Internet Research Agency stuff you might have seen.
Oh, that's like one of the interesting things, like especially like when you're looking at accounts. And I guess I wish I would have mentioned this earlier, was like there were a lot of accounts who were older in nature, who were, because of their inactivity, probably classified as, as like maybe automated accounts just because they have a little activity. So that's something just to mention. But you mentioned, what were you saying again?
I'm wondering if you came across Internet Research Agency accounts.
Oh, so no, that's not something. Well, I'm not sure if that was in our particular data set. We didn't really look into detail on like particular types or like associations of different accounts. We had over 500, we had over 88 million. So there's the potential that those accounts were in our a subset of the accounts that we have, but we never really looked at like individual accounts tied to particular, like,
you were more interested in building a classifier and detecting them rather than what they were doing in from a content perspective.
Exactly. And that's something that's like a fertile area of research, obviously, like, and that's what people want. And the people are interested in attribution or like trying to tie different accounts to different people. That's like definitely something that's really greenfield and something that like we're like somewhat interested in approaching, more so of like the intent overall. Like, you know, can we, based on the domain reputation of a particular link, can we try to classify accounts based as being maybe not just automated, but maybe malicious in nature? So that's definitely something that is an area of research. But also, of course, like some of the research that's been done, like you were mentioning earlier in our conversation about how people could use, in terms of classifying images, could you then build a classifier to say like, okay, they're tweeting out malicious content in terms of the media that they're producing? That would be some, like, definitely at scale would be some interesting research and statistics that I know I'd be interested in looking at.
So the question becomes, right, like a lot of people say, and I think, you know, normally when people sort of say these things in different situations, they come across as a little bit of a conspiracy theory. They come off as like, you remember when, you know, you'd tell people you worked in computer security and they'd say, oh yeah, it's the antivirus companies that write the viruses, that sort of thing, right? But in social media, we've got this really weird situation where, you know, account signups and user engagement are key metrics through which stock analysts actually price, you know, or place their recommendations on social media shares, right? So we do have this weird situation where there's a very solid incentive for social media platforms not to deal with the bot problems that they have. I think Facebook's doing something to address this at the moment, and they are getting punished for it. On you know, in the market. So I guess my question is, do you think when you look at this, can you look at some of these bots that you've found and just go, there is no way that Twitter couldn't actually identify these and remove these from the platform? I guess I'm just, you know, and I know Twitter, like I've got people, I'm sure there's a bunch of people at Twitter who listen to this podcast. I'm not saying that they're dopes. I'm not saying that they're idiots. I'm saying that maybe they're being a little bit restricted in what they can and can't do in terms of removing accounts from the platform. What's your take on that? I mean, did you just see, you know, a whole bunch of accounts where you're like, man, they just should not be there because they're so obviously bots and they stand out like the dog's proverbials?
I think it's really tough. And like one of the things, like I kind of mentioned earlier, is that, you know, there were accounts that maybe we identified a little bit earlier, not earlier than Twitter, but like we saw that were bots, and we, you know, we were trying to see like, okay, when will these accounts be taken down? And like, we were very happy to see that, you know, we wake up the next morning and maybe our sample of bots that we had were taken down. And like we've talked about, it's really difficult because, like you said, the cost of a false positive, are you going to catch some accounts in the fray? And, you know, unfortunately, we don't have any like idea about the process that Twitter undergoes in terms of like going about banning, restricting, or suspending, or just actually deleting accounts. So like, again, that process could vary in lengths of time in terms of like in further investigation that they want to have. What we did in our research, we use very simple methods. And a lot of the things that we wanted to try, we were limited by like the rate limits that were publicly available. And of course, like we wanted to have reproducible research, but we're definitely aware that Twitter knows how to use reinforcement models and they're able to do some a lot more sophisticated things.
Well, and they've got things like, you know, IP of login, and, you know, they've got data that you can't get as well.
Exactly. So I definitely know that they have the techniques, but again, like it is a problem of a magnitude that is really hard for even like for us to grasp of like, how do we go about doing this? But I would, you know, definitely don't want to speculate, but like, you know, they understand the platform that they have and they know that it's a great place and they would probably be incentivized to have a great platform that's clean. I mean, that's kind of free of like, you know, malicious people in malicious nature or bot accounts. So they can have, make sure that people are interacting with, you know, they are aware of who they're interacting with and things of that sort.
I find this really interesting because, you know, I had a great conversation with Alex Stamos after his keynote at Black Hat last year. And, you know, he was still with Facebook at the time, and he was really talking about this concept of authenticity. A lot of people are very concerned about how to fix some of the problems that we're seeing in social media, particularly when it comes to, you know, the manipulation of political discourse and whatnot. And, you know, I think where they landed, and I'm sure Twitter's there as well, which is that if you take care of the bots, you don't wind up with this freedom of speech issue where you're regulating what people are saying, because it turns out that a lot of the funny stuff that's happening with regard to discourse manipulation, it's all being amplified and propagated by bots. So you take care of the bots, you take care of the problem. It's all about that idea of authenticity. I guess what I'm asking you is whether or not you saw... you know, you did just mention that you saw Twitter removing some of these bots that you'd identified, but was it possible for you to determine through your research that maybe they were doing a great job or they were doing not such a great job?
I think the one thing that's really hard is because, like, because our classifier was trained on a specific subset of bot accounts, like, it's impossible to say that our classifier would have classified all different types of bots. So, like, again, it's hard to speculate. But Twitter does have access to all the data. So they are privy to seeing bot accounts that maybe weren't even able to train on. And so it's really hard to say, like, you know, was our classifier most likely wasn't better because, you know, their training set consisted of all different types of bot accounts. So they were able to classify even more or would be able to potentially classify even more accounts. So it's hard to say, like, do a direct apples to apples comparison in a case because, you know, there are accounts that, you know, were still, you know, available if you wanted to just use a metric of accounts that are restricted or suspended or not there, that were available that, of course, that are classified as bot accounts. And then there, of course, were accounts that were some accounts that were suspended or restricted in our case that we didn't label as bot accounts. So it's really hard, I guess, to do that type of comparison and say, like, oh, was our classifier better? I would imagine that it wasn't because, again, the smart people at Twitter. But we, you know, were able to show that you could find some bot accounts. You know, after looking at, you know, some of their attributes, then on closer examination appeared to be, you know, automated accounts or in some cases. But like we said before, you know, not all automation is bad. So to say, like, account is bot, but, like, if the intent of the account is not bad, for example, the Big Ben account, then Twitter obviously probably wouldn't be incentivized or wouldn't want to actually cancel that account because, you know, people do appreciate the content of that particular account.
Yeah, like the F Every Word bot. I'm sure you've seen that one.
I haven't come across that
one. It just says F and then a word from the dictionary, and it does a new one every day.
Yeah, so, like, again,
that box, account, you know?
Yeah, and, like, you know, there are meme-generating bot accounts that just tweet memes. There was one account that we actually mentioned in our paper that was basically a sign of, like, okay, but a lot of there are some bot accounts that tweet throughout the entire day. That one account was just a song lyric bot. You know, I didn't particularly like the lyrics or like the genre of music the lyrics were coming from, but it was just, you know, tweeting lyrics from probably maybe it was just like a particular, like, developer's favorite music or something like that. So yeah, there's those accounts that are automated or bots, but they're not doing anything malicious, at least from first glance or from the examination that we did in those cases. But you're right, you know, the great thing about social media is it's a place for us to, like, engage in hopefully authentic conversation with people and, like, build communities, and bots can mess that up.
They sure can. You know,
there aren't real people, and, like, you don't know if you're actually engaging with someone who's maybe not a troll in terms of, like, an automated account. So yeah, it's really tough, and it's a hard and interesting problem. It's the reason we kind of got involved as well.
So, you know, you've been lucky enough to work on this gig full time with a colleague, you know, and really sort of understand this issue to a much higher degree than certainly I do and most other people listening do. Do you think that bots on social media platforms, just generally, do you think this is a problem that by and large will be solved soon? Or do you think that the arms race is tricky enough that we're still going to be dealing with large-scale botnets on social media in the years to come?
It's hard to speculate on this issue, but from, you know, some of the research that we've done, like in the cases with the cryptocurrency botnet, they adapted to the techniques that Twitter was using to try to stop the accounts or suspend them or restrict their availability on the platform. So I could see that persisting in a way of where people are understanding those techniques and trying to evade as possible. And there's, you know, this whole study of adversarial machine learning and trying to move classifiers to maybe a different threshold or to classify accounts differently. I'm not sure. Of course, I can't speculate on how prevalent the use of adversarial machine learning or the study of it is for, you know, bot maintainers, but it's something that they can move into. And in terms of trying to kind of evade some of that detection. But of course, like, it's hard to kind of predict the future on what will look like. But I could foresee, just based on what we've seen, that, you know, techniques evolving over time to try to evade that detection.
So an arms race.
Potentially.
Yeah, right. So just before we wrap it up, I mean, what would be the big takeaways from your perspective after you did this research? What are the big things you learned?
So I think the one of the things that was great about this research was that, you know, we showed that you could really amass a large data set of tweets and account profile data in a very short amount of time, just using one API key, just playing by Twitter's rules in terms of their term of service. Then using like simple, what we would consider simple machine learning techniques, you could identify bots within a large corpus of data. And then from there, you can take a targeted approach of trying to understand their networks and how particular accounts are interacting with each other to maybe find a botnet like we did. So, you know, with those three different steps, or, you know, some simple approaches, and hopefully we kind of helped that with that kind of open sourcing our methodology and the code that we use, that people can get involved because we kind of lower the barrier entry on how to, or being able to actually hunt bots on Twitter's platform.
Okay, well, Alabade Anishe, thank you very much for joining us on Risky Business to talk through your research. It's been really interesting.
Thanks for having me.
That was Alabade Anishe from Duo Security there, a company that makes fantastic multi-factor authentication software and has some, you know, really forward-thinking ideas around zero trust networks. They're really trying to be an enabler of zero trust networks. And they're also a company that has been acquired by Cisco for truckloads of money. So I'm guessing their tech is going to be even more ubiquitous than it is now in years to come. I do hope you've enjoyed this podcast. Until next time, I've been Patrick Gray. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.